Hello again. This is your candidates forum for House District 32, and we'll resume the program now with the candidates asking questions of each other. And we will start with, let's see, we finished with, we'll start with you, Duncan, and you can ask questions of each of your opponents.
Thank you.
And remember, you have 30 seconds to ask the question, and each candidate will have, or each opponent will have, 2 minutes to respond with an answer.
30 seconds. I thought it was a minute to ask the question, but I'll speak very quickly.
Okay.
Thank you. I noted that all of our candidates have salmon on their signs. That was noted in the dispatch article as well. And I'd like to compliment Brent on his signs as being particularly well done. I don't know that we've ever had signs in our community with such artistry, Brent. So I want to talk about salmon. King salmon are in trouble all across the Gulf of Alaska. We've had many years now, perhaps as many as 10 years, where there's been no sports fishing in Karluk. Iakulik has been closed periodically. This year was the lowest run ever in Copper River. And we now have some genetic ID information about the makeup of Chinook salmon in the Gulf of Alaska, caught in the trawl pollock fishery in the wintertime. At a SWAMC meeting in 2015, Representative Stutz talked about the Chinook salmon in the Gulf, and because a large percentage of those were hatchery relief Chinook, her view was that they didn't need protection and shouldn't be limited for the trawl fleet. Is that still your view, Representative Stutz, and how would you view that position, Mr. Watkins?
I guess I didn't hear the last portion of your question. What did you say that I stated that?
Because Chinook salmon were primarily hatchery-released Chinook, that they didn't need a limitation, or the trawl fleet in the Gulf of Alaska should not be limited in the amount of Chinook salmon that could be taken.
Well, first of all, Mr. Fields, I would beg to differ with you whether or not I actually said that, because I doubt very seriously that I made a statement like that. I don't get into allocative issues per se, and I would not be so bold as to suggest how many salmon the trawl fleet should or should not catch.
Well, we need to promote clean fisheries. Bycatch is an issue that we have to address in a lot of levels, and especially in a trawl fleet, it seems to be a problem. The Chinook salmon are an important economic drive here. We're some of the few places in the world where you can fish salmon year-round, and that is going to be something we're probably going to have to build our economy on, too, to build shoulder season for our tourism and such. I have issues with bycatch and would work hard to do what we can to promote clean fisheries, be it with gear type changes or modifications to where and when they're fishing.
Thank you. Representative Stutz, we'll now give you the opportunity to ask questions of your two opponents. 30 seconds to ask the question, 2 minutes each to answer the question.
Thank you. We've all heard of the most recent major oil discovery in Smith Bay by Kalis Energy. Do you see any problems with the development of that resource?
Go ahead, Brent. Why don't you answer first, and then Duncan.
We need to come to grips with the fact that we are a post-oil economy, and that these little finds that we come up with are, kind of a harsh way to put it, like when the uncle you don't know dies and you get a little bonus check in the mail and you can pay off a credit card. We can't count on our oil being the main driver of our economy anymore. We need to raise the bar on where and how we extract, and we need to make sure that we're not doing it with fracking. The cost-benefit ratio is just not in our favor for maintaining fisheries.
Thank you,
Mr. Fields.
Louise, that's a great question. Thank you. I would beg to differ. It's my understanding that the new oil discovery in the North Slope is a very large discovery. perhaps the third largest in the United States from my reading. I think, however, it's unfortunate that the discovery was announced in this election cycle, because it may enable some legislators to cling to the mistaken belief that oil will bail us out once again and we don't make the hard choices for new revenue streams. I've been told in the reading that I've done is that while the oil has been discovered, the field is unlikely to be developed until oil gets above $65 a barrel. And so once again, the discovery is not something that may impact our state treasury anytime soon, because in my reading also, we understand that oil prices are not projected to be above $65, at least not in the next 5 years. In terms of the specifics of the question, do we see with problems with developing that? I think it's imperative that Alaska continues to support the oil industry and continue to use the infrastructure we already have, which is an oil pipeline that is only about one-third full. We also need to invest and support the new technologies with regard to the liquefaction of natural gas. I believe it'll be possible, it is possible now, but I believe it will be economically effective to, in the future, move liquefied natural gas down our oil pipeline, which, as I said, is only about one-third full. I believe the oil industry is an important partner for all of us here in Alaska. I believe we need to support the industry, but I also believe that the industry needs to pay its fair share. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Watkins, you have the opportunity to ask questions of both of your opponents.
Thank you, sir. How do you propose to use the emergent marijuana industry to the maximum benefit of Alaska and Alaskans?
Go ahead, Louise. Well, okay. One of us better go. It might as well be me. I'm saying taxes, taxes, taxes. Revenue, revenue, revenue. I think that it has the potential to generate a lot of revenue dollars for Alaska. The problem is banking those dollars. There's a lot of banks that don't want to take the dollars because of the federal laws regulating the marijuana industry. But I think that where there's a will, there's a way, and I think that it can create some pretty good revenue dollars.
Thank you. It's an interesting question. In many ways, it's a new horizon for us to look to the use of marijuana. I once again think that we develop unrealistic expectations for marijuana to be a revenue stream. We only have two examples, Washington and Colorado. And, of course, both of those examples have much larger populations. But more important, they draw from much larger populations. I've been told that in many of the places in Colorado, most of their sales are not Colorado residents. It's people coming to Colorado to buy marijuana, and that generates the revenue for the state. I don't see that happening to a great degree here in Alaska. Perhaps some Canadians might come over from Whitehorse. Having said that, we do need to tax marijuana in the same way we look at cigarette taxes or alcohol taxes. There is a cost to society, and there will be a cost. Many of those costs are yet unknown. But again, it's an industry. There's individuals, Alaskans, that will make money on what we've made to be a legal industry. And we shouldn't put a disproportionate tax burden on that industry, just like we don't want to be taxed disproportionately as a fishing industry. Yes, we will tax marijuana. No, the revenue from marijuana is not going to greatly impact our state budget. Thank you.
Thank you. Then we'll come to the second question that you may ask of your opponents, and we'll start out with you, Louise.
How did the recent power cost equalization and the revenue sharing program affect rural Alaska?
Duncan, are you going to take that first?
I can take that first. Of course, we know that power cost equalization and revenue sharing is not a new program. I think the representative is referring to changes in the program. Changes in the program stabilized the cost equalization for rural Alaska by creating a trust fund. However, I think the amount that was be distributed through the new legislation will be reduced and perhaps uneven across Alaska. Having said that, the trust fund idea was an important concept for us to develop here in Alaska. Power cost equalization is something that we need to continue, but we need to also focus on renewable energy. Kodiak's a leader in renewable energy. We need to use the technology that we've developed here and apply this elsewhere in Alaska and reduce the need for power cost equalization. Power or energy costs are the single most limiting factor in all of our rural communities. And we have a societal cost if we don't address these costs, because as people are unable to work in rural communities, we have social issues develop. If jobs aren't available, we have folks moving to the urban areas and putting a stress on our social networks in these areas. And so power cost equalization is helping people to continue to live in rural Alaska, but it's only one piece of the puzzle. Once we've reduced their cost of living there, we have to provide economic opportunities in these rural communities. The last 25 years, my professional career, I've been working to provide fishery-related opportunities to the rural communities here in Kodiak. I believe that's a model we need to continue, and as a state legislator, I will support all efforts for economic activity and rural development to allow people that want to stay in these communities, their ancestral communities, to have jobs to be able to live there.
We need to promote more renewable energy and be sure that our co-ops that exist are willing to work with these systems that come online. A large solar complex was just taken down in Bethel that was working to help make the school there be power neutral and keep the cost down. Because of a glitch that wouldn't let a third party help fund it, they took the system down and it's stuck in a yard right now doing nothing. We need to make sure that as we develop these systems that we can integrate them into the villages and encourage them, and this will help drive our prices down and make our villages more viable.
Thank you. That brings us to the third round of questions, and Mr. Watkins, you have the opportunity to ask each of your opponents a question.
There are a large number of veterans living in Alaska and more arriving all the time. What have you done and what will you do to improve the quality of life for veterans in our community and the handicapped in general?
Okay. Well, I was on the Veterans, Believe It or Not, committee. And it was a subcommittee. And we have participated in helping provide housing for these veterans through our different agencies at the state. It was a real learning experience because we have every age. And what was really interesting was in the programs that are being provided by the state, we're utilizing our veterans in providing these programs. So I would continue to support doing exactly that. It has been a really a boon of a program.
Great question. If we want to help our veterans, if we want to help our handicapped, if we want to keep the fabric of our community together, we have to balance the state budget. We can talk about veterans programs. We can talk about doing new things. But if we don't solve our fiscal crisis, we won't have an opportunity to do any of those things. So as your candidate, I'll not focus on what the veterans' needs are. I'll focus on a balanced budget. If we get to a balanced budget and a long-term fiscal plan, for veterans' issues, seniors' issues, and a host of other very important issues, we can focus on them then. If we fail to have a balanced budget, we're not even going to be able to have the discussion relative to veterans' issues. I just want to say I grew up in a Kodiak that had a host of World War II veterans. I remember my friend Gus Uvino, and I remember him talking about how difficult it was to reintegrate into our society here in Alaska. I know that those struggles continue, and I know that we as a community here in Kodiak and we as a state need to continue to accommodate veterans who have had combat experience that need the support services that we provide to reintegrate into our culture. But a balanced budget is going to have to come first. Thank you.
Thank you. You've done such a good job, all three of you, that now we're going to go now to the second round of questions each of you can ask your opponents. And we'll start again now with you, Louise, and you can ask another question of each of your opponents.
I thought we were asking two questions apiece.
You'd asked two so far, right?
I've asked two.
Duncan has a question remaining.
Okay, Duncan. Well, what I did was I went for the first set. Duncan started, and then that set, and then after that you went, Louise, and then Brent went, and now I'm going a second round, but I wanted to give you the opportunity to ask your first set of second questions first.
Cliff.
Yes.
Louise and Brent have both asked two questions. Duncan's only asked one. So Duncan will go, and then we'll go to closing remarks.
That sounds great.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Duncan.
It's a lot of moving parts, Cliff. I sympathize for sure. I have a number of questions, and I'm debating what to ask. But I think the fairest question to ask, the question I want to ask for those in District 32, both here in Kodiak and Cordova, Yakutat, I think there are 14 other communities, smaller communities in our district, is a question that would differentiate my running as an independent from someone that's running as a Democrat or somebody that's running as a Republican. Because I think in this election, we have a clear choice about our future and what that future would be. And so my question is this. For you that are running as a Republican, what is the Republicans' plan for balancing the state budget? For you that is running as a Democrat, what is the Democrats' plan for balancing the state budget?
I am running as a Republican, but first and foremost, I'm running as an Alaskan. And the Republicans that I have relationships with in the House have the same idea that I do. We are going to take a look at, just as I said earlier, we have to reformat the permanent fund. We have to take a look at an income tax. There's no question that the oil taxes need to be revamped. You take a look at just the question I asked earlier about the oil discovery with Kalis. Here's an idea of what our oil taxes are. 20% of the gross revenue from oil that comes out of that well immediately is excluded from taxes. All transportation costs are excluded from taxes, and that includes going from the well to TAPS, which is the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. The oil company earns 35% tax credits on all expenses, and that includes them building the pipeline to go to TAPS. These tax credits will be paid out of our 12.5% royalty, which is the people's money. So guess how much money we're going to get off that oil that comes out of the well? Not too much. So that is the direction that the Republicans I'm involved with are going.
As a Democratic candidate and running as a Democrat, we're the Democratic Party. We're the inclusive party. We accept all comers. We're building trusted relationships with Democrats around the state, with Republicans around the state, and independents around the state, including those that are endorsing me. It's going to be a lot of work. There is no one-line solution to this. It would have been taken care of a long time ago. It's going to be building trusted relationships with everybody around the state and listening. everybody has something to teach you. And as long as we keep that in mind, we can have open, productive conversations instead of breaking down into fighting.
So that brings us then to near the end of our forum, and we can go ahead with since we have a little extra time, 1.5 minutes, I will take the moderator's privilege here, 1.5 minutes of closing comments, and we'll start with you, Mr. Walker.
Well, I'd like to thank everybody that's listening in, and especially these folks who showed up tonight. It's always nice to see a full house, and it often is the case here, it just doesn't happen. It's a privilege to run in this state where people can still make an effect. I hear this in everybody I've talked to that they love that they can go out and call us, that they can reach into government and actually have an effect. We get disenfranchised sometimes, but as long as we remember that we can participate and that when we participate, we build a better government that meets all of our needs. We can be inclusive, we can be reasonable, and we can get a balanced budget and good government in Alaska. We have a special mindset here. We take care of our own, and we're good at that. As long as we remember that, build our coastal communities, build our economy from the bottom up instead of the top down, we can build a strong Alaska.
Thank you, Mr. Watkins. Representative Stutz, your closing comment.
Thank you. Well, I really appreciate this opportunity, and it's nice to see a lot of my friends out there. Thank you. I've lived in Kodiak for over 35 years, and I love it here. It's my home. My desire to continue serving Kodiak as well as all of District 32 is twofold. Number one is to give you, the people, a voice in Juneau, which I've worked hard at doing. Just one voice can make a difference and has made a difference, and to make our coastal communities healthy and sustainable. The next couple of years are going to require some tough decision-making, but I firmly believe I have the experience, the ability, and the relationships to do this and set this state on a solid, stable fiscal path, which will benefit all Alaskans. I've worked hard for all in District 32 for the past couple years, and I'd be honored to continue doing so. So I ask you, please, stick with Stutz.
Thank you. I think we need to end the debate tonight where we started. I do appreciate your attention and participation and all those listening online. But where we started is we've got a big problem, the biggest problem Alaska has faced since we became a state. We have to find solutions to that problem, and I'm suggesting that we have to change the people in Juneau if you're going to find a solution to the problem. I'm running as an independent candidate because as an independent, I believe that we can change the coalitions that exist and have existed and form the type of government that can address the central problem, which is a balanced budget and a long-term fiscal plan. Once again, I want to use an analogy. If you had a boss and you were given an assignment and you worked really hard, but at the end of the day or at the end of the review period, you came up and said, you know, I really worked hard, but I haven't met the goal. I've spent $8.5 billion more than we earned in the last quarter. Do you think that your employer would say, good job, go do it again? You'd be fired. That's what we need to do as a state. We need to change who's in Juneau and change the result. I'm an agent for change. Thank you for your attention this evening.
Thank you. Taking up on a comment from Mr. Watkins, I once took a course from Clive Phillips. He's a political science teacher down in Juneau, and he said, you know, in Alaska, in California, if you're not in the phone book, if your phone number's not in the phone book, let me start that again. If your name is in the phone book down in California, you're in trouble if you're a politician. But if you're a politician in Alaska, If your name and number is not in the phone book, you're in trouble. It points to the cohesiveness that we as Alaskans work together, and we have a great state. And again, I think it's a great place to live. But I would like to thank all of you for coming tonight, and I would like to give thanks to the participants for stepping forward again for public service. And I appreciate your cooperation tonight. I think it was a great forum, and I would like to thank the chamber and our co-host KMXC for the evening's program. Thank you very much, and that concludes our forum.